Okay, so we'll jump in. I'm going to need a little clock eventually. Do I have? That's good. I usually sell them on the street afterwards. Okay. So just to review where we are, we're studying a text called Namdul Lakchang. Say Namdul Lakchang. Namdul Lakchang. Namdul means moksha, okay, freedom. And then lak is hand, lakpa. Chang means to thrust something into someone's hand. It's the full form is lakchang sutupa, which means to thrust something into your hand. So there's been some, I think there's been some tame translations of the title. The title is a gift of liberation thrust into your hands, like take it. Okay, I like it. It should be strong. The title should be strong. It's a lamrim. Lamrim means steps to Buddhahood, from A to Z. Idiot's guide to Buddhahood. And basically, the Tibetans. Well, early when Buddhism came from India to Tibet, the five great books, the five great subjects, which are studied in the Geshe course. So the Geshe course is 20 to 25 years, and you will study the five great books. Those five books were condensed into the Lamrim. So in Tibet, you were either a Geshe track or you were a Lamrim track. And I'd like you to learn both, okay? So I've taught the Geshe track a lot in the ACI courses. But the Lamrim is a very beautiful compilation of all the Geshe subjects, 25 years of study in a flow, which is supposed to get you enlightened by the time you get to the last page. Okay, so it's like A to Z, and it's a very carefully constructed logical flow, very beautiful. So it became popular as a genre of literature 1,000 years ago, exactly 1,000 years ago, with Lord Atisha, who came to Tibet from India. And it has developed, and it has gotten more and more exquisite as centuries have gone on. Jetsun Kapa, 400 years after Lord Atisha, wrote the Lamrim Chemo, which is probably the greatest book ever written in Tibet, I don't know. But it's 1,000-page Lamrim, mostly based on the classics of India. And then most recently, Pabongka Rinpoche, who is the teacher of the teacher of the current Dalai Lama. So the current Dalai Lama has two tutors since his childhood. And one of those two tutors is Trigyan Rinpoche, who was my teacher's root Lama. And his root lama was Pabongka Rinpoche. And so Trigyan Rinpoche was a young man, a reincarnated lama, Tuku, we call Tuku. He was a reincarnated lama. And he was in the audience in the 1920s, I think, when Pabongka Rinpoche taught the Lamrim in a public series of teachings. I think it's 24 days or something. And then he took notes. And you have to realize that there was no electricity, and they were, you know, Pabongka Rinpoche was projecting to 4,000 or 5,000 people his voice, and Trigyan Rinpoche was taking notes. And then Trigyan Rinpoche spent many years perfecting the notes and working with Pabongka Rinpoche to write the text that we're studying. So I think it's the greatest book ever written in the Tibetan language. It's extraordinary. I was sitting around lunch with some people not long ago, and Mrs. Hancock, my old lady, and we were talking about what's the greatest book you ever read, you know, and somebody said the Bible, and somebody said Shakespeare, and I said, you know, Liberation in the Palm of Your Hands, you know, and I think it's the most precious piece of literature on this planet. I believe that, and we're in the business of saving old books, right? 200,000 old books. This takes the cake, you know. So I really, really strongly encourage you to come to these courses, okay? I was taught this Lamrim 3 times over a course of 30 years. in because I was my teacher's attendant and driver and slave. And so I got to hear it every time he taught it. He taught it in different cities. And I desperately want to pass on that lineage. I want to pass on a living transmission of it. And I need people who can, who are cups that I can pour it into. You know what I mean? And I was very disturbed. I got a very disturbing email a couple of days ago, and it was someone said, I've already studied the Lamrim, and I'm more kind of more interested in your emptiness teachings or something like that. And the word has come in my mind every hour or so since then, the word idiot. And I'm sorry to say, I know it's not polite to say that, but it just screams in my mind, idiot. You know, it's like the stupidest thing I can think of, you know. It's like, I don't know how to say it. It's like saying, I want to go to Chicago, but I don't want to sit in a car or something like that. Or I don't know how to say that. It's a tragedy. It feels like a tragedy to me. And I don't know what to do about it. But if you have the time, I don't know. For me, it would be very wrong not to urge you to finish this course, especially if you have to die. Okay, that's what I'm saying. You know, I'm not kidding. And I just feel like, I remember one day we were sitting in the monastery board of directors, were having a meeting, and I was trying to sell them on the idea of the computer project, and they listened very politely, and there's this one cranky old abbot called Gyeron Kensa Rinpoche who just passed away. And everyone was excited, and then he was like this, you know. And then he said, listen, you can have some young monks for 2-3 hours a day, 4 hours a day, that's okay. But you can't have them for 8 hours a day, you know. And I said, I'm not taking the good ones, I'm taking the flakes, you know. I'm taking the ones that can't do anything. And he's like, no, no, if I were to agree to it, I would feel that I was killing them, that I was killing their chances for enlightenment, you know. He said, I can't agree, you know. You can have them for half a day, but you can't take them for a whole day. And they don't know enough to know what I know, which is that you would kill their chances for enlightenment, or something like that, you know, if they didn't study, even if they didn't try to study or meditate. And so... so I feel like I have to give that warning, like on the cigarette pack. I have to say, people will ignore it, but it's my job to put it on the cigarette pack. You know, if you care about other people and you care about life and the world, then you should finish this course and you shouldn't miss any of it. You know, Christine Walsh had to leave last night. Her mother might have an operation today in Chicago. That's fine. That's Lamrim. Okay. Got it? She's doing Lamrim in Chicago. Okay. All right. So we started at the back of the text, which is very tantric, and we did the last section of the text about meditation and emptiness first. And I'll explain more about why shortly. And then we went back to the beginning of the text, which begins with the best presentation of the traditional preliminaries to meditation, okay? And then we've been working through those preliminaries, and we're almost done with them. And I think during this week, I can't guarantee, but because we never know how long Geshe Michael will go on for, but I think we will reach the Lamrim. Okay, and we'll start the Lamrim. So it's been, I think, 3 years. I don't know. Yeah, and I'm going through it very carefully, very slowly. Every time he quotes somebody, I go find it. I read about it. I want to do that. And I have to go around the world and teach these pseudo business success courses all the time, which is very like gives me a headache. And then this is my chance to really teach hardcore Buddhism, and so I'm going to take the time and do it the old way. So I don't, you know, if only three people show up, I'm still gonna do it, and we're gonna do it the old way. Okay? Which means many hours of sitting in hot rooms and trying to concentrate as he drones on. This is the old way. Okay. At least it's not. Well, it's kind of like a monsoon. I think we're gonna have to. Do we have air conditioners? Or I think in the afternoon we're gonna need something. I think so. I'm predicting. Okay. And it's really, really hard to concentrate when you're sleepy and when it's warm. I once had a whole ro first row in a talk in Shanghai in a theater. The whole first row was asleep before I got there, okay, before I started talking. And they looked like dominoes, you know. In China, there's a law against turning on the air conditioner until it's like 85 or 90 or something like that, because to save energy, which is probably what we should do. But anyway, all right. There are six preliminary practices. I thought we would review them. You can find me, you guys, if you go search for class space five. Okay, class space five on the document, on the Word document. Just search for the words class space five. Yeah. Wait, yeah, stop there. Good, bring that up. Just raise the whole screen a bit. No, I mean, scroll up the other way. Yeah, down. Okay, all right, stop. Okay. So this is I just thought it would be nice to review the what we went through, the six practices, right? Before meditation, which means before the Lam Rim, before meditation on Lam Rim, there are six practices. And it's up there in Tibetan, so I cheated. Wait, what's happening here? Yeah. You drank Tibetan beer this morning. It's go down one more classify. That's it. Okay. Yeah. You see the numbers? 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah. Okay, good. Joyce Dumbo Kong Ne Kong Chidor Chela Kusung Tuki Ten Dhamma. What is that first one? Just guess. What's the first step to doing a meditation session? Yeah, clean your room, straighten up your room. It gets you up and moving. And then kusung tuk is what? Yeah, set up your altar, set up your images, and put out a nice piece of fresh fruit or some water or something like that. We're very blessed that someone from China offered a statue of Jetsun Kapa. I don't know if you can see it, but he flew in yesterday or the day before. And I promised to keep feeding him rice. And man, it's a beautiful statue. And we'll talk about it. Second, Nipa Chipa Yome Ching Kupa Zepa Shamba means what? Make offerings, something. But, and the offerings should be Yome. Saying it? Yeah, rightfully obtained, honestly obtained. The money or the fruit or whatever. I once was with one of my teachers, Ngawon Tudum Nakid, and we were walking down a street in Howell, and there was a mimosa tree with that went over someone's fence, and they have these little tiny pink flowers, and I just picked one. I said, "I'll put this on my altar," and he got so angry with me. He got really angry, and he said, "That's not Yome. You don't have permission to take this person's flower," you know. And I'm like, okay. Kupa lekpa, kupa zepa means what? Zepa. Yeah, attractive. The arrangement of the stuff on the altar should be pleasing to the eye. Okay. Third one. Sumba ten dewala lu nam nangi chudun den dukud de gesem kibachengi ngangne kyabsem sok chawa. What's that? What's den dewa? Den. Den means a seat, your meditation seat. Dewa, on a comfortable meditation seat. Lu nan nangi chedun. Namnang, what's Namnang? Number Noah. Vairochana. Vairochana, okay? You should take the 7-point posture of Vairochana, okay? Which just means like straighten up your body and loosen up your eyelids and all that stuff. Good stuff, okay? Kude. Gesem Kepa Chen. And then try to put your mind in a good place, okay? We're still on number 3. Try to put your mind in a good place. And then go for refuge, etc., meaning bodhicitta, okay? Think about bodhicitta. Most often, I think, for a well-trained Buddhist, refuge means how you're dealing with problems in your life. Okay, so you have a problem in your life, which is most often a person, which is a problem in your life. And then to take refuge means you think about emptiness and you think about how this person is coming from you. Okay, and then that's protection. That protects you. So taking refuge or protection in Buddhism means you realize the person that you're having a problem with is coming from you. And rather than struggling against them, you look inside of yourself to remove the cause, because they're a mirror of you, okay? And then bodhicitta, it's very simple. I mean, if you keep doing that, other people will notice you, okay? You will be calm. You will be responding sweetly to people who hassle you. And other people will notice it, and it will spread. And if it's and if you keep it up long enough, and if it spreads far enough, the world will become a mandala. So every time you take refuge, meaning when some irritating person's in your face and you think about how they're coming from you, if you can sustain that practice over years, then you become a virus. You set off a virus, and you can change the world. And that's bodhicitta. That's love. That's real love, okay? It's not some mushy thing when you're meditating and you start crying or something like that. It's okay? It's kind of more practical. I will be ground zero for a virus of people who don't get pissed off at irritating people. Okay? And that's love, because that changes the world. That changes the whole world. You can make the world a better place. Okay. Number 4. Tsokshing Sandepa. What's that? Yeah, you picture the lamas of the lineage. So Nick's been working really hard. We've been working really, really hard for about a year, I guess, or on the traditional poster of the teachers of the lineages. The Lam Rim combines all the great lineages of ancient times, and especially the lineages of love and wisdom. And then you visualize those lamas and you ask them for help. And they are called the garden. Those lamas are called the garden because you plant your good karma in them. Okay. Number 5. Ngaba sakchang nindu payena dumba mandal dan chepa bulwa. What's that? Sakchang. What's sakchang? Yeah, jang means to clean up, but sak means to collect. So sakchang means you just before you do a meditation session, you take a very strong effort at collecting some heavy good karma. Like when I come back from one of those, you know, exhausting tours, and you know, and I'm like dying, the first few days back are very euphoric, and weird cool stuff happens to me for like 3 days because of all the karma I did on the tour. And then I revert to normal, you know. Then I think, oh, I gotta go on another tour, you know. Or after I do a lay room, you know, like I go somewhere and everything's incredible. I go into a mall and it's like heaven. And then a week later it's like hell, you know. So the idea is that just before you go into meditation, you collect some heavy good karma. And then you meditate really fast while it's still going, you know. And then you try to clean out some negative karma, okay. Something on your conscience. If something's on your conscience, you can't meditate. Okay, you should, instead of trying to bury it and meditating quietly, it'll keep making noise. So you clean out the stuff on your conscience, stuff on your heart. Okay, That involves that process of collecting good karma and cleaning out bad karma has seven steps in itself. So there are six preparations for meditation, but the fifth one has seven steps in itself, and I've typed them in for you. Okay. After you close your eyes, you go through these seven. Number one, you bow mentally to your teacher. The best way to bow to your teacher is to think of something about them that you would like to learn. Okay, if they're your teacher, there's something about them that you want to learn. So think about that. The second one is offering. So you've already done offering on your altar, but now you offer in your mind. And the best offering is what? Yeah, some attempt. I always like to call it an attempt to practice, okay? All right, so like I'm not perfect. I mess up all the time, but I did do my yoga yesterday, or I did, I tried to be nice to somebody. And then I got mad after that. But okay, all right, which is number three, confession. So then mentally, you tell your teacher mentally, I got angry at someone yesterday, and I said things I shouldn't have said, and you get things off your chest, okay. Number four, rejoicing. Buddhism puts equal weight on confession and rejoicing. For every time you think of something you've done wrong, you are required to think of something you've done right. So you're supposed to be happy. Bring up things that you did yesterday that were noble and nice, okay? And if you can't think of anything from yesterday, you can go back 10 years, 20 years. You must have done something nice, okay? All right. By the way, in my experience teaching all over the world constantly, frankly, 5,000 people came in the last 3 weeks to our programs. But my experience is that people have a problem with rejoicing, about themselves especially. People have a problem with admitting that they've done some nice things in to themselves. It seems to be the most difficult practice. You can get people to confess after a couple of minutes, but to get them to rejoice takes like a couple of weeks, So I don't know why we have some resistance to thinking about the good things we're doing and the good things that we want to beat ourselves up for. I only did yoga for 59 minutes. I turned off Bob Harper a minute early, which I did yesterday. I didn't want to do the last pose. I just turned him off. And so instead of being happy about 59 minutes of hard work, I was like, oh, I turned off Bob Harper for a minute, And that's how we are. That's who we are. All right. Five, ask your teacher to teach, okay? And there's a joke in Tibet that says, if you do step five in your meditation, and you meet an asshole today, you can't complain because you asked for teaching. I'm sorry to use bad language. I shouldn't do that. But anyone who does their meditation in the morning can't complain about whoever they meet in the afternoon because you asked for teaching. And most of the good teaching comes from people who hurt you, right? So that's just the unfortunate thing. Number six, ask your teachers to stay, okay? And we had a heartbreaking, we ended last session in Phoenix with a heartbreaking story about Lord Buddha himself, that one of his disciples, he indicated to a disciple that he might pass away. And the disciple didn't ask him immediately to stay. And then he passed, and he could have stayed. And so that's important to ask, It's never out of, what do you call it? It's never out of bad, it's never bad manners to interrupt your lama and say, please stay. Okay. All right. It's number seven, dedicate the good karma. So we're in number seven now, okay, which is banking the good karma, which means that after you collect good karma, if you get angry, okay, if you have a spell of good, honest anger, which I had yesterday, I mean, there's kind of irritation and then there's anger, right? And anger Anger is like, I don't know, it's like a coating of metal. It's like hard and it's like 5 minutes of real anger, you know it. You know how it feels. There's a strange thing of justification in your mind. Like you say, oh, finally, I'm telling this person how I feel, you know? And then you know you're really off. But those 5 minutes have the power to destroy days of good work. They have the power to destroy days of good karma. So 5 minutes, 3 minutes of real deep fury at someone in your inside. I'm very good at not, blowing up or screaming or, but inside, that's what destroys the seed. It's the inside, the anger. So if right after you do something good, you should sit down and dedicate it to some higher purpose, okay? And then it's kind of sent away from you, so when the fire goes, it's protected, right? You sent the kids away. In London, right? In the war, they would send all the kids to the countryside, and then the Germans would bomb the, sorry, London. So you're kind of sending the kids away to, you go, you'll be safe, you know. I'm probably going to get angry in the next 10 minutes, you know. And you send your kids away, okay, to a safe place. Okay. So that's, we are in the middle of that, and we have to finish that. And then we have to do the last of the six big steps. And then we're ready to start the Lam Rim by the end of the week, I think. Okay. What's the last of the six big steps? What's that? Yeah, asking for blessings. I used to call it supplication, and then I realized nobody knew what the heck I was talking about. And because I went to an Episcopal church when I was a kid, and they would always supplicate. It means begging for help. It means I need help, man. I gotta have help. The last thing before you start your meditation is you like call your lama on the phone. You say, in the end, the only thing I really need is help. I need help from you. You gotta help me, okay? In this meditation and in my life, I need help, And then that's how you start your, then you start your meditation, okay? On the Lam Rim. Which is why we're doing all this. Then you start the first of the Lam Rim in a meditation. Okay, what is the first part of the Lam Rim? Yeah, say Shinyin, Densu, Shinyin, Densu. How to find a lama, how to choose a lama, how to view your lama, how to behave around your lama, how to serve your lama, like that. Especially how to choose them carefully. And spend a lot. In Tibet, it was a tradition to wait for 12 years. You found the Lama, and then you waited for 12 years before you committed. But once you commit, you have to really commit like that. So there's a lot about what makes a good Lama, how do you know a good Lama, and stuff like that. Okay? So we'll be working on that. Let's do another meditation. Okay? I'm going to try to do more meditations. Tahiya sent me a very impassioned email, which really changed my heart, and I realized I was talking too much and we weren't doing enough practice. And let's try. She was talking about keeping silence, but let's try to do a little more meditation. Okay. Now we're back to the text. We're in the middle of the fifth, was it? Sorry. Seventh sub-preliminary within the preliminaries, which is dedicating the good karma, sending the kids away from London before you get angry, okay? Before you ruin those good seeds that you worked so hard to collect, okay? So I love this particular section. It's very, very important. And so let's read it together. He doesn't have the whole thing. So I put the whole thing for you. Can you scroll down a bit? Can you scroll down just a bit? Keep going just a touch. One more line. Oop. Good. Stop. Yeah, good. All right. So he's quoting a book called Abhisamalankara. Say Abhi Samaya Alankara. I like the word Alankara. Alam is an old Sanskrit word that means to be ready. And kara means to do. So alankara means to put on your jewelry before a ball in India 2,000 years ago. Okay? So sometimes they call books Alankara because it's a jewel. So this book is called Abhisama Alankara, Muntokgyen in Tibetan, which means the ornament of realizations. Just before you have a major breakthrough in your meditation, you're like putting on this jewelry, okay, for the big ball. That's what it means, literally. So let's read it together, okay? He only gave the lines in, he didn't even give those. He referred to the first three lines, and I added the rest because I thought it's a wonderful subject, and we have to make this program last another 12 years or 14 years. So here we go. One, two, three. Yong su ngo wa ke ba chen. De yi che ba chok yin no. De ni mik me nam ba chen. Chin chi ma lo. I think we better stop there. It's going to take too long. So saying, what's it called? Ngoa Gomlam. Ngoa Gomlam. So Ngoa means to dedicate your good deeds, your good seeds. Bank your good seeds. Put them in a safe place. Ngoa. And there are three classical places to put them, and we'll talk about it later. Okay. But the important part here is gomlam. What's gomlam? Yeah, path of habituation. So, by the way, who wrote this book? Who wrote the Abhisamalankara? Yeah, Maitreya. Who is Maitreya? The next Buddha in this world. Okay, we're on number three. Gautama is the third. And Maitreya is the next Buddha in this world. And coming, very close. But there was a... there was a sage in India named Asanga, Arya Sangha, who had a meditational experience with a dog and met Maitreya and took dictation from Maitreya. And there are five great books of Maitreya, and this is one of them. We spend 12 years on this book in the monastery. It's 75 pages. Okay, and I memorized it. We memorized it, and we spent 12 years on it. And it's unbelievable. To have Maitreya talking in your head is something cool. So anyway, so Ngoa Munlam means there. Are, how do you dedicate your good karma before you see emptiness directly? And how do you dedicate your good karma just after you see emptiness directly, okay? So after you have a direct experience of emptiness, which we call, what path? Yeah, path of seeing, or tonglam. So briefly, there are five stages in every person's spiritual evolution. Every person on this planet will go through five stages of spiritual evolution. Number one is, I'm just going to describe them, okay? Number one is a tragedy in your life, okay? A mess up in your life. Something really bad happens. And my best students had the greatest tragedies in their lives. Okay? The ones who are really superstars had the super tragedies early in their life. They were lucky enough to have it early in their life. It's number one, tragedy. Number two, somebody explains the pen thing to you. Somebody explains to you why a pen is coming from you, okay? And it's not coming from itself, it's coming from you, okay? And I'm not going to do that because you'll fall asleep. And then the third step is the direct perception of emptiness, which you can say direct communion with God or something. I think that's the closest idea in the West, is Moses before the burning bush, you know, on his face in the presence of God, meeting God. You can call it meeting God or something like that, step number three. Then step number four is called the path of habituation. And then step number five is enlightenment or nirvana. So, but why do they call it habituation? What are you getting habituated to? The thing you saw at three, okay? The direct experience you had of God or emptiness. It takes time to process that. About 500 years. Seriously, okay? About 500 years, normally. It's seven lifetimes. it takes to process that experience. And so that's called path of habituation, getting used to what you saw. Okay, now question is, how does a person who saw God act differently when they dedicate their good karma than a person who didn't see God yet? You see what I mean? How do they differ? And that's the subject of these lines. It's very sexy. It's very beautiful. Like, if you have seen God directly, how differently do you dedicate your good karmas? How differently do you take care of your good seeds than a person who didn't yet see? So that's the subject of this text. That's the subject of those lines. Now, when he says it in the Lam Rim, Pabokramacha, he just says from that word up to that word. He doesn't even give you the lines. Because every kid in the monastery has already memorized it. By the time you're 12 or 13, you've memorized it. So he just says, you know, the lines that start with that and they go up to that. And then those lines are the first three numbers here. Okay, he refers to those lines. But the quotation continues. The idea, the concept continues for another, I don't know. It's got 12 elements in it, okay? So I thought you'd like to hear all 12. So we're going to go on a major, what do you call that? Digression. Is there a better word? Journey. Yeah, like a deeper journey. Thanks, Jeff. So we're going to go a little deeper into that. And I want to do all 12 of the ideas associated with how is it that a person who has seen God dedicates their good karma, okay? Because that to me is a pretty cool subject. You know, I think that would be a pretty cool subject. Scotty, I'm going to try to send you a photograph on my iPhone. Let's see. Because I want to show it. I want to put it up on the screen if I can. Yeah. But. I mean, this is pretty advanced stuff for me. Let's see. The picture is of, I took the picture when we just finished a tour of Asia. And it was, we've done some really hard tours. We did tours of Europe earlier in the year. And then we did a really hard tour of Asia. I mean, we had a 6-hour block that we weren't busy, so we took a flight to Taiwan and gave a program in the airport and came back. And it was like that. And I was in Malaysia, in Kuala Lumpur, where we have a wonderful group. And it was about 1,000 people came. And then I had to sign books for a couple hours afterwards. And then finally I get to go home, and the place is... And then all the pizza parlors were shut, and I didn't have dinner. We didn't get dinner. That was terrible. I ate handfuls of Cheerios. And... But I don't know, there was something very poignant about leaving the hall and looking back at 1,000 empty seats, you know, and thinking about what was happening to us, you know, because it was kind of awesome. Something unbelievable is happening around the world. Something very strange is happening. And thousands and thousands of people are coming, and teachers are popping up, like... We used to have to fly 15 teachers over to Asia when we gave programs there. But now we just take the Singapore teachers to China, or we take the China teachers to Taiwan, or we take the Malaysia teachers to Singapore, you know? And it's I think about 5,000 people came this time, and I think we had maybe 20 teachers involved, I don't know, from different countries. Guadalajara sent Alejandro. It was awesome. He was a superstar in China, and he came to Beijing and Singapore, and it was just awesome. And there's this huge matchmaking going on between Mexico and China and Singapore and Malaysia and Vietnam, and sent their guy, their leader, and then Mongolia sent their guy to Beijing, you know. And one day we're sitting on the grounds of the what do you call that? Forbidden city. We are giving a program on the grounds of the Forbidden City to the head of the MBA program of Beijing University, which is the main university. It's Harvard of China. So we're about 100 yards from the Chinese White House. We're on Tiananmen Square, and we're giving a DCI program and to the heads of the universities of Beijing. You know what I mean? And something is changing. The president of China is a Buddhist. And his teacher is somebody we know. And things are changing. Things are beautiful. Amazing things are happening. And it's like huge things are going on, you know. And anyway, so we just need more help. I need more help. It's too much, you know. We're just flying constantly. And, you know, we need more teachers. We need more help. And I need to take pressure off the team we have because they're not getting any sleep. And I'm just wearing them down. I'm grinding them down. And it's hard. It's really hard for them. And somehow I don't... Something happens with me that I can travel indefinitely and it doesn't really hurt me too much. But then the people next to me, they're like dying. And I feel really bad and guilty. And then I'm like, so I'm trying to develop more people to help. And I'm trying to get more people involved to take pressure off those people and to spread out the suffering. You know? Or it's just exhaustion. And it comes a lot from happiness. It's like you're overwhelmed by events, you know. Like the thing in Tiananmen Square was like something off the wall. And it was, but it was hard. And so anyway, in this retreat, I'm trying to involve some new faces helping me. And in China, I have new people helping me. I just hired people who all year will help me there. And so I'm going to ask if you have, if you'd like to have an appointment with me. We sell walks, right? What we figured out was in the walk from here to the where I'm sleeping, which is called the infirmary, I don't know why. We figured out that any normal person can say everything they have to say in a 4-minute walk. And it's more pleasant, somehow the prana's moving better, than to sit for 20 minutes. And we can walk as slow as you like, I don't mind. Sometimes we take detours around buildings and stuff, and that's okay. But if you have a personal issue that you'd like to talk about, anything, then I'm happy to meet with, I'm happy to sell you, we call sell you a walk, okay? Then there's a lady, Ronit, where are you? Shoshan from Israel. There's a few people who have moved up around me and who are helping me. So she's just moved up to Sedona. She's staying with Nicole. And there's a select group of people who want to live in Camp Verde, and it's like a bombed out place. But anyway, she'll be doing the appointments. So if you need to schedule a filming, or if you need to schedule a walk, if you have a really serious issue going on, then I'm happy to have you over for lunch or dinner. And I kind of cleared out the infirmary. I kicked out a lot of people. They're all mad at me. And I can have lunch with people, or I can have dinner with people who are having a serious thing or who want to talk about a major project or something like that. If you're in charge of Mexico City, Bertha, and, you know, they just got the best theater in Mexico, I think, for the program. Anyway, if you need more time to talk about something big, then, or if you have a major life thing going on that you need more time than a walk, then talk to Ronit, okay? All right, and she'll also be scheduling people who'd want to just help me carry stuff back and forth and stuff like that, okay? So I'll be staying at this infirmary, and I've cleaned it out. I've kind of cleared it out of people, and I've the part of the reason is I need some rest also. I need my quiet time because I'm also like running on. And so I'd like to ask. I have a few people there helping me, like cooking or secretarial stuff. And what I'd like, and Nick's there and Aaron's there because they're running the retreat. So what I'd like to propose is that people don't hang out there. Okay, if somebody asks you to come, you're welcome to come. Because if you're working on a project there, or if you're working with Nick on something, because I feel like in the past we've been a little too noisy up there, and then that kind of set the scene for the retreat, and then everyone was talking too much and stuff like that, and I felt like it started with me and my personal assistants, and that we kind of set a bad example for the last few retreats, that we were just talking more and more up there. And it started as real business and it ended as gossip or other fun stuff. And so I feel like if we get our act together in the infirmary and we don't talk, and it happened in the 3-year retreat too, Jerome knows, it's difficult. It's like a thing can spread. Somebody starts whispering and suddenly everybody's whispering, and then they're like, they got a sign language, but they're talking also. They're like, how are you? You know? And you're like, why are you doing the sign thing? You know? And that's it. It's a silent retreat, man. You know? And you're like, it's hard to keep silence, and it's easy to lose silence. It's like a reputation. So, you have to, we're going to try to be better up there, which means, you're welcome to come if someone asks you to come and say, I need you for the afternoon or to help at the place. But if it's not the case, then we're going to try to keep pretty strict silence up there. And I'm going to try to get some rest. And it help, you know, I don't have the heart to kick people out. If you sneak in, and none of us has the heart to tell someone. So just be cool and don't put us in that position, okay? Because we can't do it. We don't like to tell people, you know. It's weird, right? Okay, good. Do you have any? I should talk about silence. I should talk about silence. Okay, I suggest you get out your playbill, which is your schedule. Does anyone need a playbill? Raise your hand high. And where are they? I hate to ask people to raise their hands before there's anything to give them. We'll bring you some. We'll print some more. So open to the first page, page 6, sorry, which is the daily schedule. Mercy, can you, Mercedes, where are you? Hi. Can you get up a long-term schedule for everybody to hand out? Like a 6-month schedule or something like that? Okay. Which means we got to talk about it at some point. 6 months is okay. Then can we wait till next week to talk on the schedule? Can we have dinner or something? 2015. Okay. Okay. So 2015. Okay. All right, here we go. Page 6. Today we won't even try to keep silence because it's hopeless. And I think we all got to get settled down. Tomorrow, which is Monday, we will keep silence up through the end of lunch at 1:15, okay? Which means we'll eat in silence at lunch, but we want to give you time to bond at dinner. So lunch will be silent, and then dinner will be talky-talky, okay? Anytime I have a class and I ask questions, I'd like you to answer. And I just decided that that's the way it's going to be. And when we have review groups, obviously you should talk. And we will have homeworks, and I encourage you to do them. You can get a certificate for this course. You can get a certificate to teach this course, but you have to do the homeworks. They're not very hard, but they're deep. And you're encouraged to work in your review groups to talk about the homeworks and work on the homeworks together. Okay. On Tuesday, silence all day. Okay. On Wednesday, silence all day. But obviously, if you're teaching a yoga course or something, you can talk, okay? Or if you're singing a song or playing sitar, you can. Okay, Thursday, silence all day. Friday, we'll start loosening up. Silence through the end of lunch. So, silent lunch, and then you can start talking. Saturday, silence through the end of lunch. And then starting on Sunday, you can talk whenever you want. Okay? So I ask you to make that commitment. To me, whispering's the same as talking. It doesn't help. It doesn't really help at all. You're still framing words and you're still talking, and it will hurt your meditation. So we're trying to get you to meditate deeper. And it'd be nice if we had silence. I know the staff will have to talk sometimes. I would prefer that the staff communicates in writing. Okay? I prefer that. If it's a long, complicated thing like a mandala, right? How to do a Vajrayogini mandala or something. Sand mandala? I mean, probably you'll have to talk. And I understand that. But I really encourage the staff, starting with Nick down, to write if possible. So keep a notebook with you and just write. And it's a good example for everybody. If you have to talk to somebody at length, I think it's nicer to go into a room or go around the corner or go hide behind a tree somewhere and talk. Okay? Anything else? Do you want to talk about anything else?